All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the class on presentation. I'll just say that this subject is huge, and I'm not sure what you're expecting. But since this is the novice track, I decided maybe it would be good just to talk about the very practical thing of what do I do when I stand in front of a class? How do I go about my job as a teacher? And so my session today is going to be primarily about what makes a good lesson plan, because a lesson plan is your presentation. And so if that doesn't fit what you want here today, you can leave. Let's pray. Thank you, God, for another day. Thank you for the ability to teach. And God, today we're going to focus on how to be someone that can cause our students to learn. And it is our desire to be people and teachers that can convey wisdom to young people and prepare them to serve you in your kingdom. And the communication process really matters. And we want to do that well. We want to do it efficiently. So I just pray that you'll be with us today and direct my speech and our interactions. And I pray that we could learn something that would help us in that. We pray this in your name. Amen. Presentation can feel very personal and vulnerable. Everyone is looking at you. If you don't talk, there's just an awkward silence. Please let me tell you several stories. I think it was in the year 2015 or 2016, I was at Faith Builders for their summer term, and one of the classes I took was Class Voice, directed by Brandon Mollett. And one of the things that we had to do at the end of the term was to do a voice recital. And he gave me a song, I forget what the song was, but I thought it was pretty hard. And so I went back to him, I said, do we have to do this one? And it was probably halfway through the term already. And so it was needing to get done, and I was having a hard time memorizing it. I felt it was a bit out of my range. And so we reconsidered, and he gave me a different song. So I had to start all over. And it was an easier song, but it was more within my range, and I felt pretty confident going into the recital. That was the last day of exams, and we had it was at the end of the day, and so we walk into this room, and there are all my peers and the rest of the students and the pianist, and I stood up front and I started singing all by myself. And I get about halfway through the song and my mind goes blank, and the pianist stopped, and I just kind of looked at her and I said, let's start over. And so we started over, and while I'm singing, I'm frantically thinking about, what was that next line? And I'm singing, and the closer we get, the more I'm like, I have no idea. And we get to that same spot, and I'm dead. It's just stop. And the crowd is just quiet. I'm like, oh, what do I do? I think I tried the third time, and we got to that spot, and there was nothing there. And so I think I had to go look at the music, or she told me what it was or something, and I finished the song. That evening, well, Mr. Mollett had graciously planned an after party for his voice class students, and at the after party, part of the job was to assess or to critique each other and talk about how it went. And part of that was we were videoed, and he had a screen and we displayed a presentation. Shame all over again, just to see myself up there just stuttering and completely losing my mind. It was rough. Another time, this was years later, at the same place. This was only 4 years ago, maybe, 3 or 4 years ago. I was a top student there, and I was apprenticing in the 9th and 10th grade classroom, and I was teaching a geometry class. And I was the primary teacher of that class that week, and just a ton of work to do. The content was just a bit above my level, so I didn't know it very well. So many other things to do, and so I entered that class not really knowing what I was doing. And of course, I stood in front of students multiple times, and that part didn't really bother me. But as I'm teaching, I'm starting to get this nervous feeling. And students are maybe asking questions, and I'm explaining, and it's not clicking with them, and they're getting these blank looks on their faces. And I literally start feeling lightheaded. And I just go blank. And I'm shaking and I'm getting dizzy, and there were veteran instructors sitting in the back critiquing my teaching. There were students in front of me waiting for me to talk, and I finally told them, like, I don't know what to do. And so I walked down the path of shame again, sat down, and the teacher came up and finished my lesson. So needless to say, I felt quite defeated after those incidents. So embarrassing, humiliating, and quite hard on my self-image. Now, to be clear, presentation isn't entirely about how you feel, but more about the student. But what went wrong? That's the question. So how can we do a presentation well? We're going to try a little experiment. Need a volunteer for 30 seconds. Thank you, sir. Would you come on up here?
You haven't been very confident yet.
Thank you for being brave. How are you doing, Wesley?
I'm doing great.
Okay, good. So, I'm going to get you to do an impromptu speech. And I have a piece of paper on this podium. And whatever the paper says, you're supposed to give a speech for only 30 seconds. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
So a spider is a little creepy crawling thing, and they build webs, and they're awesome. A web is very strong, but very fragile. Is that 30 seconds? No.
You're very brave, Leslie. Try to make sure that you get compensated for that. But I have a few questions for you now that you're sitting down and whew, you can breathe. So how did that feel? Do you want to talk about that?
It felt very scattered. Didn't know really where to start or stop. It felt very vulnerable.
Okay. So why was it bad? I assume that wasn't a good experience.
It depends how you look at it.
Okay.
One of my goals is to accept opportunities for humility. So in that aspect, I'm very good at it.
Well, you have chosen the correct career. All right, well, back to the audience. So what did you as an audience feel from the speaker? When he was up here, what did you feel?
He wasn't prepared.
Okay, he wasn't prepared. Well, what did you feel that he wasn't prepared?
Compassion.
Okay, you felt compassion. You're a nice teacher. Or a nice student, I should say. Not every student will feel that for you.
Yeah,
what else?
He was nervous.
Okay, he was nervous. How did you know?
Body language.
Body language. Okay. You want to offer anything else? Here's another question. Did the speaker stay on topic?
I'm not sure we knew what the topic was. I don't know what's on the paper.
Okay. Great question. Are you starting to put some things together? So, this is what the paper said.
Spider.
So, obviously, you didn't, so the answer is no. The speaker did not entirely stay on the topic. I'm not being hard on you, I promise. Did you sense a purpose for the speech? Not really. Okay.
Last 30 seconds.
Did it last 30 seconds? No, that was about 15.
Not other than he bravely did what he was asked to do.
Yes.
That part I admire.
Yeah. Thank you. I honestly didn't know if I wanted to do this or not, but we do admire that. So thank you for being vulnerable with that. So hopefully that tells us something. So the objective for this class is that every teacher needs to cause a student to learn. So like I had asked earlier, like did you learn something from the speaker, or did he stay on topic? Like, was there a clear purpose? And you didn't really, which I didn't really give a chance to, but we need to cause a student to learn by carefully preparing four parts of a lesson plan. And we're gonna get into that later. So the question is, so what is the purpose of a presentation at the class table? I think in your books or in your description of this class, that was one of the questions. So what is the purpose of a presentation at the class table? Well, the answer is pretty simple. It's just simply to cause the student to learn. We need to cause the student to learn. And it's amazing how quickly we can derail from that, even as experienced teachers. It's not to entertain. Now, you may think, well, I'm not going to be that person. But the reality is some classes are just fun. And they're a great group. And you just enjoy telling stories, or we get down bunny trails. And it's a lot of entertainment. But we're not causing the student to learn. So that needs to be the focus of our presentation. It's not to show your authority, pump up your ego, and tell them how much you know about stuff. That's not the purpose. Although both of those things, to show your authority and to show your and to entertain, can be elements of a presentation, but it should not be the primary focus of your presentation. Your presentation needs to what?
Cause the student to learn.
All right. So that is my attempt for today, is to kind of help you. What are some very practical things you can do? And I feel like I have a lot of stuff. And I hope you don't feel like you're vomited on. And it would be fun to actually interact with this and work through some of those things. But let's just go through the four parts of the lesson plan. And I think about a lesson plan, maybe you don't think about a lesson plan as presentation, but a lesson plan is your plan for presentation. And I just want to point out, and one of you mentioned it, why did Leslie really struggle with his speech? What was the number one reason?
He wasn't prepared.
No preparation. Thank you. There was no preparation. And if you don't prepare, you can get a teacher's guide and teach a lesson. They have objectives in there for you. They have lots of different parts of the lesson plan in there for you. And I will say, if you're experienced, you can get away with it sometimes. But that should not be your primary practice. But preparation. A lesson plan is your plan for presentation. If you follow your lesson plan, hopefully it will guide you through a presentation that causes the student to learn. So let's look at the different parts of that. So I just decided to give you a lesson plan. So this is what a lesson plan paper can look like. And if you like a physical copy of that, I assume you're probably going to write on there today. At least that was my intent, if you want to take notes. But if you want a physical copy that's not marked up, please ask me and I would be willing to give you that. Also, I have that as a digital copy. And if you type out your lesson plans, I can give you a digital template and you can use that. So feel free to ask for that if you wish. So, the planning part of this. So that's our first step. Our first step is planning. Well, you need to plan your plan, right? So what are objectives? Objectives specifically identifies what the student will be able to do. Specifically identifies what the student will be able to do. So once again, it's amazing how muddled that can become in our teaching. You need to bring it down to, they recommend two or three things max that you can go back to after you're done teaching the lesson and say, these are the things that the student will be able to do. So be very specific with that. Identify what the student will be able to do. Another part of this is assessment. So assessments are, they identify how I will know if the student has achieved the objectives. You know what the objectives are, but how will I know that the student has achieved this? Well, this can, you can write down multiple things. You can say, well, in their quiz, they will score a 95% or greater. That can be an assessment. And make them very specific. Don't be so general. Be very specific. How will I know that the student is achieving the objectives? So once again, write them out. It's so good to have them in our mind so that we have something to go back to and know if that is really happening. And the third part of the planning is the materials needed. Now, sometimes, depending what you teach, you need different materials. So if it's a science class, for example, it may call for a list of things that you need for that class, and it's just a place to put what you need for that. So items that you need to teach the lesson. So that's the planning part of it. And then we get to the opening. So this is more like the actual presentation of the class. So the opening routines. So once again, this isn't really presentation. This isn't necessarily you talking, but this is an important part of a lesson. The opening routines I define as daily routines that are asked of the students to bring a sense of purpose and normalcy to the classroom. Daily routines. What are your daily routines? Ask of the students to bring a sense of purpose and normalcy to the classroom. And I think yesterday you talked about procedures. So this is kind of come under that. What is expected of the students when you say 8th grade algebra class? What are they expected to do? What are those daily routines? So how will the students come to the class table? Where will they sit? Does their order matter where they sit? It does. So think about that. So sometimes you don't necessarily have to write this down because some of that is in the procedures and they know. But remember, you want normalcy. You want them to understand. And what are they expected to bring to class? And this can vary also. Obviously, they bring their textbook. Maybe they bring a pencil and eraser. And depending what you're teaching, there could be a list of other things as well. So write them down in the daily routines and make sure you announce that when they come to class. What are they expected to bring to class? And sometimes, depending on your content, there may be other special instructions for today's class. Make sure that you know. So when you're planning for this presentation, make sure that you know. And I think this is huge because forgetting something back at a desk, and it happens to me often, and it always frustrates me because it interrupts the flow of learning. I'm in the middle of teaching something, maybe it's, I don't know, geometry lesson of some sort, And I forgot to tell them they need to bring their protractors to class. Well, then I stop. Oh yeah, go back and get your protractors. And there's all kinds of things that can happen. From the moment you tell them they need to go get it, they go back. I mean, it's just so many opportunities for things to go wrong. So the more you plan and think, what will I need so that they can bring that when they come to the class table, will aid you in your presentation and in your ability to cause a student to learn. The less distractions, the better. All right, what about another part of your opening is a review and the drill review / drill section. So a review, I define this as review of previously learned facts and ideas that bring coherency and sets the stage for organized content. Let me say that again. So review of previously learned facts or ideas that bring coherency and sets the stage for organized content. So why is review important? Well, it reinforces what's important. As students review these ideas, it helps them to let go of other ideas that may be nice, but they're not important. So what is the irreducible minimum? You may have heard that term before this week. What do they really need to know? This goes back to your objectives. What were the objectives in previous lessons? Do they know that? So you may have said lots of other things in class that might be nice, but what are the irreducible minimums or maximums that need to be reviewed? So it reinforces what is important. It builds confidence. Anything that you learn, any hobby, anything that you enjoy it after lots of practice, right? So it builds confidence, and they need to feel confident in that. Another reason why review is important is because it supports students who are struggling with content. So maybe in yesterday's lesson, they didn't quite get it, but to hear it over and over and over again, it may be a while before the light bulb comes on. And so review is really important for that reason. Another reason, it allows for cumulative and connected learning. There's a lot of stuff that they learn in school. And so to connect all those dots is really good. Without review, students often lose knowledge. So you want to keep them current. It reviews the previous information necessary to understand the next piece of information. So we could talk about this a long time. But they need to have some kind of foundation for what's coming next. And so it's important that they refresh their minds. Okay, what do we know? And then based off of what we know, we can then learn something new. And it provides a way to check for understanding. You're a teacher. It's your job to make sure that the students are learning. And so we need to assess that. And when you review, you're like, oh, that student, he's not with me. So we're still in the opening part of your presentation. But you can't miss the review section. Good reviews are efficient, okay? So don't allow it to take 20 minutes of your class. They're efficient, and they hold everyone accountable. And they should also be done. So we have reviews in this part of your lesson plan, but I just want to remind you that reviews should be done at the beginning, during, and at the end of your class. You're constantly reviewing things just to periodically make sure that they're with you. Another part of the opening is the hook. So, what would you say was my hook for this class? Leslie's presentation. Okay, good. Thank you for being a good hook there. But a hook, it catches the interest and the attention of the student and sometimes makes the content seem more applicable. So your job as a teacher is to catch their interest and attention. And you need to create a need for your class so that your students want to be there. This needs to be a big part of your presentation. But you need to create a need for your class that your students want to be there. So your hook can do that for you. Many of you have watched other speakers and you've sat under various speakers. But I will guess that you often decide within the first minute or so whether your speaker would be worth your time. Is that true? Maybe not even a minute. Maybe in the first 10, 15 seconds, you're like, oh, wow, this is going to be good. And you straighten up in your chair and you're attentive. Okay? So in the same way, in your presentation, you need to make sure that your presentation is something that is going to catch the interest of your student. So these are ideals. And before you get your hopes up too high, this is really hard. This is a really hard part of teaching. And the reality is, you can't have a spell-binding hook every single time, or you can't make them laugh like crazy every single time, or you can't hook people very easily, and you just have to be okay with that. But attempt to, at least in some way. Several ideas and things to remember about the hook. So just like I said, this should not be a place of primary energy. So you can put a lot of energy into a hook. I remember in my own training, like I would stress, like, how in the world can I do this? Because I don't think of myself as being a very creative person. And so some people are very creative and a hook comes easy for them. So just go for a low-cost and efficient hooks. Don't spend a lot of time with it. And some ideas for this is tell a story. Tell a story from your life. That captures their attention. Sometimes a picture is all you need. Maybe it's a question or a problem. Some people love solving problems, so if you give them a problem, they're like, how can I interact with that? They want to solve it. Some people are not driven by that. A question demands critical thinking. So sometimes a good question, don't ask a boring question, but if you want to use a question that demands them to critically engage with that question. It brings them into focus. Maybe it's a joke or a riddle. That can be a great way to kind of entertain for a little bit, and that's okay. But hopefully it's connected to your content. Maybe it can be a new book. I enjoy, you know, a good children's story every now and then, even to adults. And that can be a good hook. Or it can be simply be a preview of what will be done in class. Maybe it's a little demonstration. And they're like, oh, that sounds exciting. But remember not to make this a primary place of energy. Go for something that's low cost and efficient. And another part of your opening should be the introduction. So this defines what the lesson is about. Several things about the introduction. So it should effectively transition from the hook to the lesson. This should effectively transition from the hook to the lesson. So make sure there's a connection there. And that will help them. If you have a hook and there's no way connected to your lesson, it will jar them. They're like, how is this connected again? And you will lose them. So these transitions are really, really important. Or it can simply be a simple but a clear blurb about the lesson. Again, a lot of these things also depend on who your students are. Some of you are first grade teachers, and some of you may be upper grade or high school teachers. And so think about your audience. How can I connect them with previous learned material to where I'm going today? And this is also a place to tell them about the objectives for the lesson. Give them an idea. This is what we are going to learn today. And that prepares them for your lesson, and they kind of know what to expect. All right, let's go to the the body section of this. So direct instruction. This is simply where you explain or lecture the content. And so this is a really important part. How will you do that? You need to spend a lot of time thinking about how will I break down this concept that every single step needs to be clearly defined in your mind, whether you use a chalkboard or whether you're lecturing or what you're doing, but you need to clearly understand how you will break down the content. So this is where there needs to be a certain degree of mastery yourself of the content. So direct instruction, the explanation of the lecture of the content, modeling. This is a big part of being a teacher. Physically showing how the content works. Okay, something that I like to think about here is the idea of scaffolding. Now, most of you probably know what scaffolding is, right? Why scaffolding? Does someone want to explain that? What do you do for scaffolding? Or what is scaffolding? Okay, it builds off the bottom, right? And as you, I don't know, maybe it's putting siding on the house or whatever it is, like you build the scaffold to be able to reach higher and higher and higher, right? And you start at the bottom and you build scaffolding. So think about that in your teaching. So the concept that I'm teaching today, where do I start? And this goes back to your review. I gave them that information. How do I build off of that information? How do I build off of that information? And we use this scaffolding idea to take them to where you want them to be, to take them to your objective. So think scaffolding. And be very intentional about this. This takes a lot of work. Be very intentional about this. Your teacher guides can help you out with this to a certain degree. But you need to think from their perspective. This is a big part of presentation, is who are your students? Like, you might know a student that will easily get it, but there's a student that doesn't get it as easily. And think in from his perspective. What is in his life that will help him process that? Maybe he has a fascination with trains or nature or whatever it is. So can you use something from his world that can help that scaffolding in his mind? And that's the challenge of being a teacher, is that you often have a wide range of talent and a wide range of characters and so on. So you need to think about your student and how you will build that scaffolding for them. So teach the idea. Use a chalkboard. I have a lot of respect for some people because they can use a chalkboard so well. A chalkboard is a tremendous tool to use. And a lot of you are new teachers, and I don't know if you're used to writing in public on a chalkboard. It's actually quite something to learn. You're not used to writing the right size. You're used to writing small. And to write on a chalkboard with your whole hand moving feels different. You should try it. And so I, honestly, when I first started teaching, there would be some meetings after school where I would just write on the chalkboard just to practice. And I highly encourage you to do that as well. So use the chalkboard. Model what you are thinking. And draw diagrams, draw arrows, whatever you need to do to model that. Because some students learn by pictures and by diagrams. That can be very helpful for them. So your presentation about that matters. So teach the idea. Model the idea. So you teach, talk, lecture, whatever you need to do, and you model the idea as well. So you do it yourself, right? Use that chalkboard. Practice on the chalkboard. Practice your handwriting. A teacher that has handwriting that isn't very, you know what, can't be understood. And some of us have problems with that. I think my writing has greatly improved since I've been a teacher. So you should care about that. That's part of your presentation. Remember, presentation is causing the student to learn. And if there's a missing link in your presentation, your student will not learn. So every part of your communication needs to matter. And then we think about scaffolding. How can I break this down? You teach the idea, you model the idea, and you ask students to perform the idea. Now it's your turn. And so you need to give them an opportunity. And once again, think about, okay, how was I going to assess this? Think about your objectives. What do I want them to learn? So go back to those things and ask them to perform the idea. And this can be done on the chalkboard. They love that. This is a chance for them to get out of their seats and do something on the chalkboard. If you're at a nice school, you have a room that has chalkboards as wide as the room. This is a nice school. It's nicer than mine. I only have a chalkboard that's about this size. But chalkboard space is so nice, especially when you have a bigger class where you can line them all up and they can all solve a problem. And I think that's really important because a student gets tired of lecture after a while and they can watch you, but you admit it, you're kind of boring sometimes. And so you need to get them involved. Allow them to come up and try it. So also, you need to think about that part. Do they know what's going to happen in that transition from their desk to the chalkboard? Do you have some procedures in place for that? So remember, good communication, causing a student to learn. Every transition matters. And so think about that. Make sure your students know the expectation. So to summarize this part of modeling, I think of three short sentences. I do, we do, you do. I do, I model, we work on it together, and then you do it. Okay? I do, we do, you do. It's just a good practice. It might sound simple, but once again, this can be so forgotten when we're teaching. We're in a hurry, we quickly tell them what to do, and we don't take time for things like this. So I do, we do, you do. Another part of the body is the activities, discussion questions. It gives the students a chance to interact with the content. So this is the we do part. Okay? You need to interact with them. So you need to give them a chance to start modeling back to you, I guess you could say. And you interact with them. All of you, in your hobbies, have probably interacted with someone that taught you, right? And it was great to have them alongside of you to show you what you've done wrong, what you need to do different, and to also encourage you. So don't forget about that part of it. This is your chance for you to interact with your students, correct them, but also compliment them. And sometimes use a student to model something for the rest. Get them to say what they did and maybe teach the class. I've already even used students as teachers, right? They got it. And sometimes a student can explain stuff better than you because they're relating to their peers, and sometimes you just don't have their language. And so for them to talk about it can actually be helpful. And you be careful with that. Some students love that attention. But it's a tool. Use it sometimes. And then guided practice. This is where students practice the content with the aid of the teacher. So students are mostly on their own. Maybe they go back to your desk and you say, do problem 13 and 14. And they go back to your desk or their desk, and then everything's silent. They do a couple problems and you walk around and assess them. Remember your assessments? So make sure they're following the steps. And if they still need some aid, you're welcome to do that. But in general, the students should be able to, when they leave the class table, they should be able to do things mostly independently. So for the closure part of this, so when you close a class, this gives your students a sense of closure and a feeling of, this is what I learned today. Your closer should do that. So if your student doesn't really know what he learned that day, your presentation was not done well. So make sure the student has a feeling of this is what I learned today. So in the conclusion, it should summarize the main points of what was learned. So in their presentation, we give lots of other nice things, right? But go back. This is part of review, right? Go back. In your conclusion, summarize the main points. What were the main points of what we learned today? And just go over that again and again and again. Or ask them to summarize. And it should also include some independent practice. The guided practice, obviously you're still with them. I wasn't sure where to put independent practice with guided practice. It's sometimes hard to decipher what's what. But that could also be considered part of the closure. And then the assignment, just make sure that the student knows what is expected. We can always assume things, but just to remind them, this is the assignment for today, this is due tomorrow, so it's a chance for you to make sure that they know the requirements for that. So, a little bit of alliteration here. So, the prerequisite for presentation is preparation. The prerequisite for presentation is preparation. And on the first day, if you were in that class, Derek talked about the three words for, what was it? Okay. I'm thinking about what was the class?
Fire planning prevention.
Yeah, I heard that one too, but I didn't quite follow it. But on the very first day, what was it? It's actually all the same word.
Remember that? The three most important words for a pilot, chef, or...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's preparation.
Right. So, teaching is all about preparation. So the prerequisite for presentation is preparation. So, we have some time here, yeah? And maybe just a few other things to think about in your presentation. This isn't necessarily related to your lesson plan, but I think can be a big part of it. So gain the respect of your students. And this could be a topic all on its own. Smiling at them. And... calling them by their name. I just think it's so important that when the student comes in the morning that you greet them by their name. A person's name is the sweetest word to them. So call them by their name, greet them with a smile. Make sure you have the respect of your students. And in your presentation, that will go a long way. If they don't appreciate you as a teacher, I don't really care how good your presentation is, how bulletproof your lesson plan is. If they don't really like you, good luck. Think about the five senses as much as possible. Like, how can you engage all five senses? A person learns best by engaging as many senses as possible. So I realize that perhaps it may be hard to engage the sense of smelling when you're teaching a math class. But think about that. How can I engage the more senses that you can engage in your presentation, the better and the more concrete it will be in their minds? Think about, once again, this is a review, but what is the irreducible minimum? This is just really important. What do they need to know? Create a need. You are responsible for the to cause your students to learn. And I'll just open it up. Are there any questions? I know we kind of flew over a lot of information, but I would be happy to discuss, answer questions. We have other teachers in here too that have taught a number of years that would be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question. Do you have advice for teaching like quite a few grades, and like all my grades will be only one student in the grade except one, and I was by myself in grade for a lot of my 4 years and had bad memories of having to answer all the review questions. Like, I had to know everything. Nobody else would come and say anything. Mm-hmm. But I want it to be fun for my students.
All right. Well, I'm not sure. Does anybody have any of you experienced that? I don't think I've ever worked with that. Brian, go ahead.
So I tend to look at it as being more of a tutor than a teacher at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Use enough review to know where the student's at, but don't fire gazillion questions like
right.
You have a lot more students.
Right.
It's kind of how I tend to take it. If they know it, hammer down.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily lecture them because spend more time than is needed just to make sure they've got it.
Good. So I think so, and you kind of touched on this, is the advantage of having a single student is that you can personalize your review just for them. You know what's important for them, and so they don't need to go over all the things. So it can be personalized and more of a tutor approach. How does that change your teaching? I'm not exactly sure. I'd have to think about that a bit. But maybe think in that mindset of a tutor, where it's much more personalized. Anyone else have anything to share about that?
Sometimes, like especially for the older grades, I had several that were just one student, and if it was a student that was just very self-motivated and learned well, I would often just not even have a class for that student, or just maybe ask them, did you get the lesson today?
Mm-hmm.
And if they did, then that's it. If they didn't, then I would specifically try to address their questions, but not go over everything.
Right.
Did I miss the answers on this first section?
In the first section? Was that the objectives and assessments?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I defined them. I think I did.
I think maybe they're confused about what it's actually. This is like a template for planning your lessons. So he didn't go over objectives because he's not actually teaching a lesson, but that's what you would use when you're teaching lessons.
Right.
That, right.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. My lesson plan wasn't bulletproof, I guess. So yes. So in that section, I was thinking, so objectives. So maybe in the objectives section there, I know I have 1, 2, 3. So the 1, 2, 3 is there because normally there's 2 to 3 objectives in a lesson, but I'm just defining that and make sure your objectives is what identifies what the student will be able to do. So I'm thinking you just write that in that section. And then assessment is how will I know that the student has learned the objectives? And then the materials just identifies the items needed to teach the lesson. Yes, sir.
I haven't thought, but I always assumed that there would not be more than one objective. Like you would refine it to one sentence if possible.
Mm-hmm.
But give me an example of using 3 objectives. Math or English.
What subjects?
Math or English.
Math or language?
No, or English.
Oh, English. Okay. So.
Maybe that depends on your students. For me, I need one line.
Well, oftentimes in math, so you have one concept that you're learning, but it's maybe broken down into 2 main ideas.
Yeah.
So I would make those objectives pretty specific and detailed. So that's a good point. So you have a math class or a English class, and this is what the topic. So your objective is not the topic. The topic is not your objective. Your objectives are specifically they need to learn this step and this step.
So let's say it's casting out 9.
Yep.
You, like, in my mind, you would figure out a sentence or like one, like refine it down to one sentence, but you're thinking maybe casting out 9, so break it down 2 more steps.
You're going to say something.
It could, one example could be, depends on how big the casting out 9 is, 2-digit numbers.
Yeah.
yeah.
Eight-digit numbers, six-digit, I mean, there could be, it could be that precise of where you cast nines out to the thousands of place or something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow you do 10,000, I don't know.
Yeah, right. Another thing I'm thinking about is, so sometimes solving a problem looks different than actually solving a story problem. And so you can have an objective, well, this, they will know how to do this problem, like in the steps, but another objective should be they will also know how to identify how to solve it in a story, where it's a bit more nebulous and they don't know for sure. So there's all kinds of things that we could talk about, but there's what they call the Bloomsburg taxonomy. How many of you heard about that? It's like a whole pile of words, like identify, solve, all kinds of words like that, that you can choose from to help you build objectives. It gets pretty detailed and complicated, but good question. It is time for me to shut up. So thank you again for your attention. And what's your job in your presentation?
All students to learn.
You're dismissed.